So in conclusion, the next steps for us were, following this study, additional HUD funding would allow for us to increase program reach. We actually, because of the success of getting to the children, our target population that we needed to find in Minneapolis, St. Paul, Hennepin, Ramsey County, we did receive another grant for the years of 2006 through 2009. It's a demonstration project. And to date, we've done 152 asthma interventions. We've got 261 children enrolled. 117 of these households were very low income or qualify as very low income under CBDG guidelines and HUD guidelines. And surprisingly, we're finding a huge number of single head of households. 94 out of 152 are single head of households. So we really need to get going and keep going with this initiative. Thank you.
Plant, and I'm here to talk about recent immigrant working and renovation and construction business and their families are increased risk of lead poisoning. The Boston Public Health Commission Lead Poisoning Prevention Program does a lot of surveillance throughout the city of Boston. We have our city is one of the cities that has 67% of its housing is built before 1978 and contains a lot of lead paint. And this is particular to a lot of the high-risk neighborhoods where there's a large minority population, about 70% African-American, which live in that housing. And of course, their children are primarily affected with lead poisoning. One of the things that we've been able to do over a 35-year period at the Lead Poisoning Prevention Program is to develop a lead case management system which tracks all our children, all the children that are brought into case management, and allows us to do surveillance on the case management system for elevated blood lead levels. That surveillance has allowed us to look at each individual neighborhood, also to target our resources to doing work in those neighborhoods to really reduce the level of elevated blood lead levels throughout the city of Boston. One of the things that we have is our licensed health inspectors that go out and do the inspections. We also have community health workers, outreach workers, social workers to go out and to do the work within the families and the children to ensure that they are getting the needs and their needs are being met in terms of lead paint poisoning. One of the things that allows us to do the kind of enforcement when property owners do not do the necessary work is to, we have a Massachusetts lead law, which is very tough on property owners, landlords, who have deteriorated housing with lead paint and don't bring them into compliance. We also use another public health policy and regulation, the sanitary codes, 197, through 199B, and we also, as I mentioned, the lead law, which is 460, 105, 460. And then, of course, we use nuisance laws when things don't quite fit into the really restricted language in the lead law. And we use that Chapter 111, 122, 127K. One of the things that we started to do is as we're going out and we're on a daily basis doing neighborhood surveillance, we respond every day to complaints from neighbors about someone doing illegal work in the neighborhood, particularly someone's illegally deleting their house or doing unauthorized work to remove lead paint from the exterior of their homes. And these calls come in frequently from banks, residential neighborhood, people. It comes in from the mayor's hotline, so complaints are received and we respond to those complaints on a daily basis. Our inspectors go out, validate whether those are real complaints or whether they're unnecessary complaints, and then move forward. One of the things that we found out throughout this whole process is that we found a lot of new recent immigrants doing a lot of the unauthorized work. And they were unprepared, really, to do this work. They hadn't been trained. their employers had not given them the proper dermal and respiratory protection. And there was a language barrier when we were trying to educate them on site. Now, our office has a lot of people who are fluent in, let me just back up, are fluent in the languages of the neighborhood. And one of the things that they are able to do is to bring people together even when they don't speak that particular language. We have outreach workers can go out and do the translation. Because we initially did not have someone speaking Portuguese, Brazilian Portuguese, to effectively communicate with the workers, we had to get someone there so they could understand what we were trying to tell them and to actually give them some education and to provide them information that was necessary to protect them from lead dust, which was most of the houses have about 7% lead paint. And of course, if they're scraping it very without the dermal protection, they're going to have a high elevated blood lead level that they're being exposed to. And our concern was also that they might be taking those lead burdens back to their families. Each year, we do about 100 cease work orders throughout the high-risk neighborhoods in the city of Boston. And we find that once we've issued them, we have to play a catch-up because they go from one neighborhood to the next doing work, and we have to catch them several times. And the employers are notorious for shifting their workers from one site to the next. So it makes it very difficult to cover. We have about 5 inspectors to cover the entire city of Boston, 47 square miles, to ensure that people aren't doing. But one of the best things is that our neighbors, neighborhood advocacy groups, and complaints come in, and we do follow those up. But we actually literally have to catch people before we can do something about it. One of the things that we've been looking at is the prevalence rates of elevated blood lead levels in each Boston neighborhood. And because the immigrants that we found, the Brazilians were mostly living in one neighborhood of Austin Brighton, which is here. You can see the prevalence rate over the last few years, from 2000, calendar year of 2002 to 2006, for Boston, it's down about 2%. And we screen about 24,000 kids a year. So you look at Austin Brighton, it's about 1.5% in terms of the prevalence rate. And you look at the center of the, you see that the North and South Dorchester are the highest risk areas in the city most of the time. And now North Dorchester now actually had an increase in 2006. So this is due to the large number of children living there and also the deteriorated housing, substandard conditions there. We do see a decline since 91 in terms of the elevated blood levels across the board in the city, but we do have some neighborhoods that are more difficult to get the reduction to happen in a quick manner based on the amount of renovation work going on. And you can see here in Hyde Park, which is increased here, and North Dorchester increased in calendar year 2006. Now, what are the one of the things that we like to see is, what's the spatial distribution of all the elevated blood lead levels in the city? And again, this map from 2003 is pretty standard for the last 4 years. You see the high concentration of elevated blood lead levels in the high-risk areas in North and South Dorchester, Mattapan, Boxford, and then Austin Brighton here. You have a more spread out levels of elevated blood levels, elevated blood levels here in Austin Brighton. And this is where most of the Brazilians live, along the Austin, Brighton, and Cambridge line. And the housing per se is not that deteriorated, but they are working in conditions that are bringing them in higher risk to be lead poisoned. And again, this is pretty typical of the map that you would see, and it hasn't changed that much in terms of the last 4 years. You see this particular cluster right around the high-risk neighborhoods of North and South Dorchester. One of the things that we continue to look into is that what can we do to see increased risk of getting the Brazilians the information that they need to get so they can not expose themselves and